Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Joy 94.9.
Good evening. Welcome to another episode of Lefty Pinkos. It's Brian here.
And Kath.
And we will be joined by a very special guest this week, a fella from the Tiwi Islands, Jason DeSantis. And I'll actually be upfront and honest now, people, because I might refer to Jason as a her or a she or as Foxy, which is her drag persona. So please, if I do that, don't get offended. Don't think I muck up on gender pronouns. But
because who can blame him? Anyone who saw Sister Girls and... If you didn't, you should. It's this amazing Australian documentary about going up to the territory, and there's this whole group of people, and some of whom identify as women the whole time. Others are sort of, just great, I don't know what you call it, kind of drag personas, entertainment personas, personal personas of different genders perhaps to what they were born. And Jason is a key figure in this piece, and Jason's character, Foxy, is also there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very excited that Jason's going to be with us tonight. He's dressed as Jason at the moment.
It'll be Jason, so that'll help me kind of get my head around the fact that it's a he. But, yeah, our guest tonight is from the Tiwi Islands. Jason's also a playwright. He presented a play at the Sydney Opera House recently, and he's also in Melbourne now developing a play to be presented as part of MTC's Neon Festival program.
And he's, like, busy as, because he's going to be on at the NAIDOC event, yeah?
Outblacks,
working on Sister Scream, working on this one that Jason's going to have to pronounce for me again, but it's this amazing Tiwi legend that's adapted by a whole lot of people. And what's that other one? Oh, anyway, we're going to find out. He's amazing.
Listen to us right around the nation.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Joy 94.9. It's Lefty Pinkos here with Brian
and Kath.
And we've got a very special guest in the studio, a man by the name of Jason DeSantis, who, I guess to summarise him, is prolific in many senses, in the sense of theatre, in the sense of drag, in the sense of being a playwright. He's a funny guy, so I'd imagine over the next hour there's going to be a lot of laughs, I think, here in the studios at Joy. But, welcome to Joy 94.9 and Lefty Pinkos. Jason, how are you going, mate?
Yeah, great. Thank you very much, Brian.
It's a very blokey voice you've got there.
Oh, thank you.
Because I just said in the intro, I'm kind of often confused you for a woman or a man, or I'm going to muck up gender pronouns. But yeah, the very blokey voice you've got there, Jason. Oh, is that your on-air voice?
Yes, this is my on-air voice.
Thank you very much.
you just close your eyes and go with that, and you'll get there. Now, Jason, we know that you come from Tiwi Islands.
Yes.
For people who don't know, can you describe where that is?
So the Tiwi Islands are made up of two main islands. We have couple of little ones that float around. We're about 80 kilometres northwest of Darwin.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from the larger island, which is Melville Island, and which is actually the second largest island off the coast of Australia after Tasmania.
True.
There's Melville Island and Bathurst Island, and the community that I'm from is Millicuppity.
So it's like really tropical all year round.
Yeah. We're like right on the top, kind of facing towards Indonesia. Yeah.
And did you grow up doing things like, fishing and doing all that? Or did you grow up in school and buildings? And I'm just trying to get a sense of what it's like to grow up.
Yeah, like there was all the, we had all the infrastructure and everything like that there. And, very small though, like the community. We have about 450 people in that community. So, yeah.
On Melville, yeah?
And, a lot of residents too as well are transient, so the kind of population goes up and down.
Depending on the weather and stuff.
Depending on the weather, yeah. Yeah, of course. And, it was very chilled out life to be growing up in. I kind of lived between the islands and Darwin, so, we'd fly in and out all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I did most of my education on the mainland, so, yeah. It's still a beautiful place to go back to. My family are there, and my mother is the mayor of the Tiwi Islands.
Oh, fantastic.
So,
cool.
Yeah, so head over there a fair bit
Swan when I'm not down here, freezing. In the Merrill dwelling. Or, no. I guess for a lot of people sort of thinking of that part of the world, it's a lot of people be quite envious, I guess, of, you know, constant sunshine and being surrounded by ocean and so forth.
Definitely. Yeah. Like, it depresses me just thinking about where I could be while I'm down here
in Melbourne. Melbourne in the winter. Yeah.
Now, Jason, I mean, people out there may have seen a film called The Sister Girls, and it's actually, I guess, to tie it into Joy and you know, GLBTIQ stuff, but Sister Girls was a film that was about the Tiwi Islands and about photographer Bindi Cole, who's an Aboriginal artist from Melbourne here. She went up there to, take photographs of the Sister Girls, and you were involved with that project, and it was actually made into a documentary, I guess.
Amazing piece.
There's this, as a result of that, I guess, when you sort of think about the Tiwi Islands, you often think about the Sister Girls. Can you tell us what, you know, the prevalence of Sister Girls or that culture of the Sister Girls, and what is a Sister Girl?
Okay. So basically a Sister Girl is, you know, a man who sees himself as a woman within the Tiwi society. You know, they take on traits of women. You know, they like to, if they like to use, you know, a kind of, you know,
use the word transgender.
Yeah, a colonized word would be to be transgender. That's why I think they choose to call themselves Sister Girls, because that's something
their
that
own
we.
Term,
yeah, that's our own term, and so I guess they call themselves transgender, and they very very womanly, and especially in, when I say womanly, I don't mean just by kind of, you know, their looks or even how they see and represent themselves, but also by their roles they play in their family groups. You know, that are, you know, the typical black woman living in community would, you know, and her role and her gender role and whatnot. So, there's probably about 50 on the islands.
And that's, I mean, in terms of the population, that's fairly a large number. Is that like, anomaly?
It's about 4% of the Tiwi population is
sister girls. Yeah. And what's in the water that sort of makes that happen? Is it like, what, is it a cultural thing or is it?
I don't know. If you look at a lot of island cultures all over the world, there's that kind of, that third gender.
Yeah.
Kind of role, because, you know, I know that there are like numerous layers of gender and not excluding kind of any of those or anybody from that, but like in Tiwi culture, there's typically is three genders, which is male, female, and sister girl.
Yep.
So you know, there are some boys who say that, oh, I'm a gay man, but yet they identify with the sister girls.
Mm-hmm. And you're gay. Yeah. But call yourself a sister girl, or would you sort of?
Well, yeah, like, you know, I think, and it's like I said, it's about that thing of not having that kind of, you know, choosing our own term for
your identity,
you know, identity and, you know, gender identity. But I think, you know, my drag character Foxy definitely embodies wholly that kind of sister girl attitude and kind of, you know what I mean, and because she's in my eyes a developed character as well, you know, because this is performing arts is what I do, and but, you know, also she you know, like, I've grown up with these sister girls in my life, and, you know, I like to advocate for them as well. And
fantastic. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Joy 94.9. Mm-hmm. Lefty Pinko's here with Kath and Brian, and we're chatting to Jason DeSantis all the way from Tiwi Islands in cold, hard Melbourne. We'll be back to chat some more after these announcements.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Joy, and you're with Lefty Pinko's with Kath and Brian in the studio here in Melbourne, and we have as our special guest for the hour Jason DeSantis. Can you say that again?
He's Jason DeSantis.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Jason's going to be correcting our pronunciation a lot over the hour, I'm afraid. Wait till you hear the full name of his performance piece he wrote himself. I just want to ask, we've been talking about Sister Girls, very well-known Australian documentary, and Jason's/Foxy's role in that documentary. What I thought, Jason, was that you were one of those people who lived in quite a lot of different worlds, you know, because there was sort of the sophistication of the city world, the gay world, the sister girls world, the Tiwi Island world, and also having to kind of help with some of the cultural complexities around Bindi and the filmmakers coming into that community. And so I think in that documentary, Jason, more than any other character, you can see, whoa, you know, he's you're pulled, you're really a very full person. Yes. Is that the way you read it, or were you just like portrayed that way because it was easier to cut it that way?
Yeah, there was definitely like, you know, some kind of post-filming cuts and edits with the documentary, as there is with, you know, anything that's not live. Yeah, there was definitely like a play around with kind of, you know,
bringing out that reality TV aspect or something
that,
almost.
Kind of like the plots. And yeah. The little turns and twists in the.
Well, you were really pivotal in that, in like the drama.
You're like very much like a leader, I guess, in the film. Like you kind of assisted Bindi as a friend and also as somebody that was, I guess, her cultural attaché on site.
I like to call it cultural dramaturg.
Nice. But what is that sort of aspect of your identity? Because it's something that I see in you, Jason. You're very much like a leader. You know, you're very sophisticated, you're very urbane, you're very grounded culturally. Where does that come from? Is that like a familial thing, or is that
I think like definitely like that has come from you know, the women in my life.
Yep.
You know, from my grandmother, you know, through to my aunties and you know, my mother, you know, like she's a leader in the community back home. And I just think that, you know, there's, you know, for me, there's not enough, you know, young Aboriginal people who also, you know, do like have that attachment as well to the queer community, who are trying to be really innovative and, you know, kind of really use our skills to not only put our point of views across, but also like, you know, the point of view of a lot of people, you know, kind of in our community and in our age bracket, and I just, yeah, I kind of, you know, not interested in sitting back and waiting for things to be given to me or for things to happen. Like, I just make them happen myself. And I find that really exciting, and that journey really the most exciting part of it, of you know, even, like, I don't, even though I, like, and I'm not trying to, you know, take anything away, but like I do see myself as a leader, but at the same time, like, I'm really just doing everything that I love doing.
Yeah.
Creating opportunities for yourself, especially like working in arts, you know, there's actually not enough opportunity out there, really. And the only way to actually get somewhere is by just doing it yourself,
making it happen yourself,
and engaging the right people who you know, who are from all, you know, walks of life and all culture, you know, white and black, and, you know, getting those people on board and to help you out with that.
Just on that point, I wouldn't mind, like talking about your play, and I'm going to try to get my mouth around this here on air. Wula Maneu and the Seven Pamanui was your, it's a pantomime theatre piece that you wrote.
And staged.
It came out at the... was first presented at the Come Out Festival in Adelaide, but you've also presented it at the Darwin Festival and as part of the Message Sticks Festival at the Sydney Opera House. Tell us, I guess give our listeners a bit of a description of what the show's about.
Well, in 2008 I came up with this idea to adapt, well, not even adapt, like it's more so just, you know, better, you know, effectively mixing Tiwi culture, that Grimm's style of prose and storytelling, and that kind of what happens when you get dream time and you get, you know,
Grimm's combined.
That kind of that, you know, you call it two folklores or two, you know, mythological stories or, you know, like for us, for Tiwi people, like we have dwarves in our culture. You know, a lot of black fellas will, even your countrymen too, so we have stories of little men, right? And so they're dwarf-like, almost leprechaun-esque. Humanoid kind of creatures, and people think, oh, they're like myths or spirits, but we're like, actually, no, they're real, like they actually exist. And You know, we believe in that. That's the biggest difference between us and that, and, you know, like kind of fairy tales,
yep.
is that we actually believe that these kind of
things
creatures
exist,
and,
yeah.
and spirits exist. And you know, like with, and kind of with the fairy tale stuff, you know, it's all about, that's, you know, these are myth and folk, myth-based stories that are and folklore stories that we use to educate young children and teenagers about, you know, about life, and kind of that's how Dreamtime stories work as well, you know. So I thought, well, why not mix it together and see what I come up with. And Tiwi language, like, you know, is very rhythmical, and so mm-hmm. is, you know, those...
the Grimm's prose.
Yeah, yeah, the Grimm's prose, and it just worked for me perfectly.
How long did it take you to write it? Because
About 3 years.
3 years.
Well, I think it was the first... my first plan, like when I wrote it, I actually wrote it already, like kind of directing parts of it myself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So when my end product already was like pretty
polished,
you
know,
and well,
like
yeah,
stage directions. You stand here, and
yeah. Well, you know, and kind of, you know, I wanted puppetry in the mm-hmm. show. You know, and all different types of puppetry, and I wanted song, I wanted dance, I wanted
drag. You wanted drag too, yeah?
Yeah. Well, I actually didn't want drag at all in there.
Oh, really?
But then my director, who is
the director? Yeah,
Eamon Flax, who's
currently directing Angels in America at Belfast Street. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, cool.
Yeah,
that's the kind of caliber.
So, fantastic director, you know. Definitely somebody that, you know, is going to be huge and have a great mm-hmm. career in this country and probably internationally.
Yep.
But, yeah, so he said, oh, well, look, you know, he watched the Sistema documentary and said, well, I think that it's important that if we are going to represent Tiwi Islands, let's put...
that thread of drag through it, yeah.
Yeah. And it works perfectly because the drag character is... you know, in Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, there's the mirror, mirror on the wall. And whereas in my story, it's the evil spirit of the water. So, you know, there's this kind of like evil stepmother who's an evil spirit, you know, kind of, and she's a shapeshifter who's shapeshifted to look like a beautiful woman, played by Natasha Wanganeen, mm-hmm. who's, of course...
from Rabbit Proof Fence. Yeah.
Yeah, and also won an AFI for mm-hmm. Jessica.
Yeah.
Bryce Courtney's Jessica. Yeah, so she plays this Jitta Kalala, who's this evil stepmother, and she, yeah, kind of, you know, does this thing of evil spirit of the water, show me how to kill this clever daughter to a barren land we sent that we know is dead and dry. She found food, why? And he's kind of like, evil spirit of the water am I? What I tell you is not a lie. Yeah, it's like, you know, he's kind of really kind of camp, and, you know, there's different layers to him, and, you know, she's the typical kind of fag hag who... who wears the undies in the relationship.
So, yeah. And it's a pantomime, and I guess it's, I mean...
It probably works in a few different levels, like for kids and adults, these different layers.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And that's the thing, like, you know, people were kind of walking out and going, that's not really a show just for children, is it? And like some people have said, oh, the way I would describe that, it's kind of like watching a Blackfella Shrek film on stage. Like,
you know,
they're kind of pop references that... pop culture stuff, and like,
I like the sound of
yeah
it.
So and kind of that double entendre as well, you know what I mean, that I use in there,
that Simpson sort of humor, like it works for adults and for kids on another level.
Exactly. So and I think that's for me, like I enjoy, you know, family movies. I don't enjoy high gore, high violence kind of based stuff, and because, you know, there's enough of it already, like, you know, that there's enough violence in the world as it is. Like, I don't need to be, like, trying to...
add to that.
Yeah, add to that. And that's why I love writing for families. And, you know, if you want to get kids to the theatre, who takes them to the theatre? Adults. So you've got to be able to entertain those adults as well, just as much as the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it very much works on that level. And it's been presented at the Sydney Opera House. How is that feel to have your play presented at the, you know, the kind of piece de resistance of Australian kind
the
of
landmark cultural centre,
icons.
Really, yeah,
you could miss it very easily, though, couldn't you?
I've never heard anyone say that before, but there you go. I'm from Sydney, so I sort of have that. That's our
yeah, exactly,
landmark
exactly,
thingy.
Yeah.
But it must have
that's
been pretty
how
cool.
is rock.
That's fantastic.
fantastic. How was it presented at the Sydney's Ayers Rock? Your play.
It was fantastic, you know, like, I kind of like, I don't really think much, like I go, oh my God, my show wasn't at Sydney Opera House, but kind of, yeah, when people bring it up, I kind of go, wow, my show wasn't at Sydney Opera House. So yeah, for a first show to be my first play that I've ever written to be put on there is, yeah, and in the Playhouse, which is, you know, it's the primary third kind of biggest.
Did the audience go off? Biggest, did they totally go off?
They totally did, because they didn't know what they were going to expect. And these, you know, one thing I loved about this show and what I got from the audience and, like, the kids, you know, there's a lot of culture and stuff and Tiwi language in there. And the kids, like, you know, from, you know, mainstream, you know, kind of middle class, you know, kind of families and schools that attended, you know, the way that they just picked up on it. And I just think, you know, this is exactly what it's all about now. It's about us young artists, you know, who do have the abilities to write and you know, have clear visions of why we want to put theatre on and why we want to write theatre. This is why, because these young kids who have probably never met an Aboriginal person in their life or never heard, you know, an Aboriginal word that, you know, other than, you know, if they say, oh, yeah, no, I'm going to Tuggeranong or you know, all those Aboriginal branded suburbs, you know, which they, you know, sometimes often don't realise that they're speaking Aboriginal language there either, you know, got to sample firsthand, you know, Tiwi culture, but with an awesome story to carry that across to them. And who here in this world doesn't like stories? You know what I mean? In whatever shape, form it comes across.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Joy 94.9. Lefty Pinko's here with Kath and Brian. We're chatting to Jason DeSantis, the writer of Ulamanayu and the Seven Pamanui. And we'll be back to chat about Jason's, I guess, role.
Other ventures.
Yeah. There's very many, but we're going to talk about his drag and his current production that he's doing with MTC's or Melbourne Theatre Company's Neon Festival.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Joy 94.9, Lefty Pinkos with Brian and Kath. And we're in the studios chatting to Jason DeSantis, a fellow from the Tiwi Islands who is a playwright.
A writer, performer.
And we're kind of going to grill him on his drag. Jason, you're probably one of the most amazing drag performers I've seen on an Australian stage. I'm not necessarily
into drag. Seen a few.
Really big claim.
I wouldn't say that... Yeah, I wouldn't say, I mean, Kathy, make it make me feel like I like, I don't necessarily get into drag, basically, but when Foxy does perform, it's just mind-blowing. You're a joy to watch, and you can do the splits too, which is really, it helps.
Really?
I guess. Yes. But tell us about Foxy. She's a bit of a celebrity in the territory.
And is Foxy like you or not like you?
I think that, I think that, you know, if anybody who does drag or even people who don't do drag and just, I think every gay man has that little,
inkling,
has that woman inside, that, you know, some part of him, and some of them give voice to her, some of them don't.
Poor things, but, those that don't.
Yeah, the poor things. but, you know, like, I think that, yeah, I've tried to, as I've got it older. I've tried to separate Jason and Foxy, because I like to think that Foxy, you know, is a character, and you know, is a
is she like an identity or a character? Yeah.
She's a mix of identity and character, you know, embodiment of like strong black women, and I like to see them as two different people.
I get the sense that you've always been a performer since you were a child and upwards, and were encouraged to be a performer. You know, did Foxy come from a long time ago, or is Foxy a relatively recent phenomenon?
Foxy came out about 2003.
Oh, wow, okay.
I did my first ever drag show.
About 10 years ago?
Yeah, 10 years. Oh, my God. I've been doing drag
shows. And has she changed over the 10 years? Or?
Yeah, definitely.
Tell us a bit about those changes.
She started off as a little, trashy kind of run amok.
Like unrefined or something? Or
yeah, and kind of like, you know what, you see a lot of those drag queens who are like that when they're really, really young, like these boys who first do drag and they kind of start off and they're really trashy and like use those drag characters to kind of like get what they need. And and it is a bit like that when you first start off with drag, you know. You've got to place yourself,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, those drag characters need to get old and, get you know, become more mature as well as time goes on. But, yeah, Foxy's definitely matured as well as, you know, along with Jason. So very different to what she was 10 years ago.
I mean, you mentioned earlier, like, you know, there's a drag persona in every gay man. Why did you want to illuminate Foxy? What was the reasoning behind putting her out there?
Because I love, like, dancing and performing and, you know, that sort of thing. And it really is just taking that, you know, looking in the mirror with your brush in hand, miming Janet Jackson.
As you do.
Yeah. It's about taking that and going, you know what, I'm going to take that another level up and, you know, kind of use those days of doing that in front of the mirror to now become that queen that you see yourself as on stage. And it really, that's really where it comes down from for me, like, because I was definitely that kid looking in the mirror, miming songs and, like, trying to get, like, you know, perfect lip placement on certain words and, like, you know, that sort of thing, and, like, kind of mocking those music clips that you see on TV.
Yeah.
Like, you know, J-Lo and, you know, with all the lasers going off in the background.
Like, yeah. I guess I'm a bit fascinated by then how you looked for a wardrobe. I mean, because about 10 years ago, you would have been just under 20. Most 19-year-old guys are not, let's say, the world's greatest experts on, like, how women dress or whatever. Mm. What sort of look did you go for? What would you wear in those days, and what do you wear now as that character?
Like, kind of back then, so bad. I look at some of the photos, and like I said, I try to go for that kind of like punky, trashy kind of
cool
drag look.
Ripped lace or something or what?
Like, yeah, and like, and then, you know, as years went on, Fox had become a bit more refined. And
she's pretty glitzy and glamorous, I think, Fox. I mean, her legs are great. She wears some pretty hot outfits that, like, got a lot of shimmer and shake and work well on stage and under lights.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, and that's where it's gotten to now, you know. Yeah. And it's kind of like if you look at, you know, Beyonce back in the day in Destiny's Child, and then you look at her now.
Like a bit clunky, but now she's deadlier.
Yeah, exactly.
We're actually Australia's gay and lesbian full-time radio station. What advice would you give to a young wannabe drag queen out there?
My advice would be is to hang out with the as bitchy and old and bitter as the older ones seem to be. hang out with them because, you know, and really get on their side because... unless, of course, you're already a fully trained makeup artist and hairstylist and, you know, fashion stylist. You know, unless you cover all those bases effectively, listen to the older ones, take on board what they have to share with you. And, look at those women who you think that you can best kind of like try and be like. You know, so I'm talking about, you know, if you're a little skinny white thing, then look at people like, you know, Kylie Minogue and Kesha and, you know, what's her name? Taylor Swift. Swift, yes. Look at those types of girls there and, you know, try and mock them as much as you can. Mm-hmm. if you're a black queen, look at people like... you know, Whitney Beyonce. Houston, oh. Janet Jackson, mm-hmm. Beyonce, Kelly Rowland, mm-hmm. Chaka Khan. You know, if you're a bit curvier and really, like, you know, you what you want to do? You want to be the best version of those women as a man, like, so, you know, look at them and learn.
Now, you've said you'd like to have a child of your own someday.
I don't know. Like, having a child and being a father is definitely an important part of who I think that I am going to be. And you know what I mean? Like you said, the term leader and, you know, kind of an advocate and that sort of thing. And I think that's, you know, that kind of next step up is having a child. And I think that that's not something that I think will happen, you know, anytime soon, as in like the next, you know, couple of years. But I definitely want to be a father and I definitely want to be, be able to look at a child and say, yeah, you know what, you know, I've helped influence their life, and I've given them as much as I can possibly can. And that's, I don't know. And also, like, I think culturally it's part of who I am. You know, my Aboriginal culture, you know, like, we're very strong on having children. And because you teach, because then I have, you know, another human being to pass on my culture and my stories and continue the longest continuum through, and that's the only way we do it is through our children. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's why I really want a child or children. Clearly, if I can afford it, I'll have heaps.
Yeah. Really? Yeah.
One in every dock.
You're on Joy 94.9 Lefty Pinkos. We're laughing and chatting to Jason DeSantis here, and we'll be back after these announcements with more chitty chats and music and talk about Jason's current projects.
Joy 94.9.
We're very pleased to have Jason with us. And Jason, we've been talking about, now you've got, you know, you wear lots of hats. You're a performer, you have a drag persona, you write works. We've talked about your work, which was, see if you can say it again, Brian.
It's pronounced, Kath, Wulamaneyui.
And the seven. Oh,
God. Wulamaneyu and the seven Pemanui.
That's oh, it. Lovely.
Awesome.
Jason, you're also working on a project now. It's called, is it called The Sovereign Wife, but it's part of a Sisters Grimm series?
Yeah.
Explain that for us.
So the Sisters Grimm, who I've come to learn are very sought after and acclaimed theatre company, mm-hmm. Who have been around for about 7 years now.
Yeah.
Driven, of course, by the spirits of Ash Flanders and Declan Grimm.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Should have known those guys had something to do with this.
Yeah, so this is their company. And, yeah, I was asked, engaged through Declan, because Declan and I met each other with PWA, Playwriting Australia. They did the National Script Workshop. This was back in 2009, I believe. And, yeah, he asked me to be part of this production because he had seen and heard of Foxy. He'd watched a Sister Go Doco, that sort of stuff.
Oh, so Foxy's the character in this?
No, no. Jason.
Jason is an actor, yeah.
But he,
right.
Yeah, so he wanted to see how I'd go in the show and kind of hear, you know, the show is in three acts. So it's almost 3 hours of theatre.
Wow. Okay.
And yeah, I play three different characters in the show. Which is exciting. So I play Dougie, who's like he's from the Eureka Stockade.
bit of a bloke, is he?
He's a bit of a bloke. He leads the stockade through to, you know, their demise, really.
yeah. This is like the guy for the job. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. And then in the second act I play Joe Stockley, who's, you know, he's a fighter, and you know, he's married to a lady called Anna, and he's basically a hitman that's what he does for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the end, I play the lead character, who is Moira Flaherty, who is an Irish woman. So
sorry, I couldn't have picked either one of them. That's really stretching you as a performer. Wow.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, it's very challenging. Like, you know what I mean? Because it's theatre that questions genderism. Colorism,
race,
yeah. race. yeah, everything, ageism, you know, kind of gets all of that and kind of inverts it and puts it on its head.
Mm-hmm. And when's that one on?
That opens on at the 12th of July.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so no pressure.
Yeah,
I mean, wow. And so you're in rehearsal for that now?
Yes, in full-time rehearsals with that at the moment, and that's on as part of the Neon Festival with Melbourne Theatre Company.
Now, you don't live in Melbourne full-time?
No, yeah. I kind of, I'm very transient, you know, with all the work that I do, and I kind of been Sydney, then I've been Darwin, and I've been here.
So you get to move around the country a fair bit.
Yeah.
What's that like, not having, I guess your home still remains Tiwi?
Tiwi Islands, yeah, definitely. Yeah, okay. It's still my home. What is that like? It's great, but it's also stressful at times too, you know, because sometimes you just want to be in one place
and
for a long amount of time, you know. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, but, you know, like I kind of, the way I've got to think about it is that, you know, I really wanted this lifestyle and I really wanted to have a life that's here, there and everywhere.
Careful what you wish for.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it comes down to. One of my best friends up in Darwin, she always says that to me. She goes, you know, this is what you wanted. And she kind of laughs at me. And when I'm like stressed out and going, I just don't want to be here. I just want to be in Darwin, or I just want to be back in the islands and kind of having my homesick moments. Yeah, she just laughs at me and says, But she so supports it, though.
What would you like to make of your career? I mean, if you could have, you know, the sort of, you know, future life or future production, creative kind of thing that you wanted, what would that look like?
Well, like, you know, the reason why I'm starting off in playwriting is because eventually I want to become, you know, a writer for film, you know, because... There's no money in playwriting, you know, like, yeah, so, like, as much as I you know, I'll always do theatre, but, you know, eventually I want to be writing for film and not just black stories, you know what I mean? I want to be, like, assisting people with all different types of stories and so, yeah, and just constantly working, you know, that's all I wish for in the future, is that I'm always employed as an artist. And and that gets me to a stage where, you know, I'm comfortable and healthy and, you know, able to provide that nest for a child.
This family you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, this family that I'm envisioning. But, you know, it's kind of when you think about it and talk about something enough, like, it eventually happens.
Manifest it and yeah, make it happen,
you know, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, you know, be at the stage where I can, have that and, you know, I like to think that everything that I ever wanted, I always get. So hopefully, you know, all of that is part of that bigger picture too. And but yeah, and just producing work and supporting other artists and young artists who, you know, who are like, you know, who will start off doing what I do, or, you know, not even knowing how to start off doing that sort of stuff. And, you know, just constantly helping people with that. And, you know, that's all I ever see myself doing, is constantly creating and constantly assisting others.
Yeah. We haven't raised this yet, but you're actually, if you've just tuned in or you're listening to us, so we're talking to Jason DeSantis, and he's actually a man who's under 30 years old, and you're very accomplished for such a young age. And it's quite funny that you're talking about, you know, like, I just want to help young people and all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, I look at you and I see you as somebody that's very young, very enthusiastic. And is that what you want to harness and sort of promote? And
And sometimes I don't even like, you know, just like the kind of leadership thing, I don't even think about that either, because, you know, like, I'm just kind of just doing it. And and sometimes I think, yeah, I need to really kind of put all that into perspective and kind of go, okay, you're at a age and, you know, where you can really be, I could probably be doing so much more with my time. Like, I really do think that sometimes I do waste time. And
you need to be a bit easier on yourself,
sweetie.
No, like, I seriously think that, like,
it doesn't sound like it, do you?
Yeah.
No, I mean, maybe you're just one of those lucky people who does actually get to have time out in a place like Tiwi, where you can just chill, you know, not
everyone's
got that.
I feel really guilty about that too. Like, I'll be like laying there relaxing or fishing or
you'll be thinking of a million things.
Because all we do is fish. Like, seriously, it does sound so typical and cliche, but we do fish a lot.
What sort of food do you have up that way? Like, if you're
mud crab. You know, just fish and turtle meat and, you know, buffalo and stingray and, all the yummy, delicious foods that, you know, aren't, you know, killed in large factories and
packaged in plastic.
And packaged in plastic and shipped off to your local Woolies.
Do you know how to do the whole thing? Like, get the stingray or something, cut it up, something, cook it or something? You know how to do all that?
Yeah, like, we cook it, like, if we catch fish on the beach and stuff, like, we just pull it straight out. And if we're hungry, we just cook it straight away. And then, or we take it home and, like, if we get stingray, we make, like, curry stingray.
We do
KFT, which is like Kentucky Fried Turtle, like, all my grandmother's, you know, secret herbs and spices,
yeah.
You know, which is family tradition. Like, nobody outside of our, if you don't have the last name DeSantis, you're actually not allowed to know the recipe. yeah, so it's full on.
Could we get a Joy exclusive? What are the secret herbs? No, I'm
kidding. Well, next time I go up to help, I'll try to remember to bring some turtle meat down.
KFT, eh?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty beautiful. It's pretty yummy, even though there's probably vegans listening right now who are probably dying a little bit inside by me talking about that.
Oh, you just sort of celebrate your traditional culture.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's it.
To you vegans out there, just yummy. Let us be.
Yeah, exactly. It's so yummy. And, like, you know, we have bush honey up there too, you know, which is a beautiful
And that's honey. Not vegan either, honey, because it's produced by bees. So,
yeah, exactly. And we, like, you know, we'll have, like, carpet snake, or we'll cook possum or bandicoot on the fire and then dip it in the honey.
Possum.
Yeah. Well, really? I would never eat one of your mob's possums.
Oh, okay. Like, I was about to say, so they're different sort of possum.
Tastes like Kimby and heavy chocolate.
Garbage, probably. Yeah. Oh, dear.
Now, Jason, you've mentioned that you're presenting your play, The Sovereign Wife, on Friday the 12th of July, but you're also going to be performing at Outblack that night.
Oh, yeah.
Is Foxy going to come out, yeah?
Yeah, so Friday the 12th of July, yeah, straight after...
You're kidding me, you've got a double date?
Two stages.
Double date.
Oh,
how is
wow.
that? And I just realised, because I'm meant to be actually growing my beard out for the show, Brian.
Well, how are you going to work that?
I don't know.
Maybe wear Foxy sort of just a veil.
Maybe I have to do like an
Arabic burqa thing or something.
Yeah.
Come out as a homage to...
Because there's no way you're going to grow that back overnight.
Exactly.
And exactly. What's your Irish character's name?
Moira O'Flaherty.
Is she going to have a beard, is she?
Sorry.
She's a bearded lady.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow. You were kidding me.
To cope with the harsh political climates of Australia.
Oh, and the
I wish I could do that.
She's become a bearded lady. Apparently that's what will happen to all the women of Australia eventually.
Right now, yeah.
Dealing with climate change and colder temperatures.
And political changes.
That's what Julia Gillard needed to do. I think she needed to
grow
that beard.
Yes. A really nice one.
Nice ginger.
Ginger beard, lovely. You've tuned into Joy 94.9. It's Lefty Pinkos here with Kath and Brian. We're chatting to Jason, and we'll have to call it a day, I think, soon.
Oh, this has been fabulous.
It's been fantastic.
Jason, you're a treasure. And we wish you all the best.
Thank you so much.
And how do we get to Tiwi? How do people get to Tiwi? Can people just rock up to Tiwi?
You've got to be invited in.
Yeah, you've got to be invited in. Just like, you know, there's direct flights with...
Well, they cut the permit system
Virgin
with the
Tiwis,
didn't they? Tiwi Virgin Airlines,
Virgin Tiwi Airlines. we have direct flights from Tullamarine to Millicarpet.
To Tiwi?
Really?
Yeah, no, we wish. We're having big parties up there for you both to come to. Get to Darwin and then, jump on a boat and start rowing. No.
60 k's north, yeah?
80 k's.
80 k's.
Well, actually, Millicarpety is further. It's like 120 or something.
So there's no way you could see the mainland from there, is there?
No.
It's just like surrounded by ocean.
Yep, surrounded by ocean. Yeah,
come on, Brian, let's go.
Well, I need to get up there. Jason's extended invitation, but I haven't taken that up proper way. So
again,
I need to pull my finger out, basically.
Exactly. From where?
But it feels so good, Jason, as you know. Anyway, it's been a great pleasure. We'll be back next week with the Outblack crew in. We're going to get some mob from Outblack because they've got their NAIDOC event on that Jason or Foxy Empire is going to be performing at.
Yes.
But, thanks for your... the bearded lady. But, we'll be back next week from 8 p.m. every Tuesday here for Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9.
See you then. Bye.
Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.